Hey, Northeast Pennsylvania, it's Rob O'Donnell here on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. You can also catch us anywhere for your favorite podcast. Just search The Rob O'Donnell Show. And again, that Odyssey app, free at the App Store, and iHeartRadio app. You can get us anywhere in the nation, so check us out there. How's everyone doing on this Wednesday, August 20th, 2025? It is just about 308, 65 degrees. Big change in the weather here. Some for the better. I know we got a little rain today, but don't worry about it. That hurricane is staying off the coast, just giving us some storm surge along the Atlantic seaboard. Some wind and some rain, so we'll check it out. Nothing really to concern us. I'm happy to bring on my next guest early in the show here, State Senator Rosemary Brown. Senator, thanks for joining the Rob O'Donnell Show here.
Hi, Rob. Thanks so much for having me.
And thanks for being here. I saw this story that's out where the PSEA sent a letter. Apparently, you're responsible for no money going to the schools and no budget. So tell us what's going on in Harrisburg and the story behind this. And we'll get into what I consider a hit piece here because it was just singular, directed at you. Yeah. It's just ridiculous coming from the teachers' union.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was extremely disappointed yesterday to see the PSEA hold a press conference that I feel is absolutely a political hit piece, party-driven, and something that during this process is definitely not productive to achieving a compromise, achieving goals, and really protecting the students, the teachers, and everyone involved in our education system. So I think it was highly unprofessional of them. And, none of those people at that press conference have reached out to me personally.
And that's sad. This is what dialogue that needs to happen. And again, in their letter, that they're pushing you to pass a budget, obviously not the budget or compromise, but and not support a proposal that they said would funnel taxpayer dollars to vouchers for non-public schools. Well, that's also the parents, the taxpayers who are out there who actually vote and raise their children, and the children themselves. Competition is good. The governor himself ran on bringing school vouchers as a choice for parents. And here they are again using that political, and for the governor to remain silent on here is another story, because since he got elected, we haven't heard a peep from him on these voucher programs. But again, it's very partisan and directed. It has nothing to do with the true budget negotiations that are basically stalled because of lack of leadership in the governor himself down in Harrisburg.
Yeah, I think, the governor absolutely during his campaign for governor said he would support vouchers. And then it became very silent, and the House, really pushed the governor to kind of push back on his initial stance. And so, there's a lot of truth be told in Harrisburg where you have to stand behind, what you stand for and what you said you would stand for. And so I think that is part of this conversation. You mentioned, Rob, that the fact of parents and children doing what's best for them. I mean, we're talking about the most underperforming, most detrimental school education systems for our children and our families, of getting vouchers to help these kids have opportunities and help them move forward and be amazing adults and have great careers. So, I mean, you look at that and say, how can you be against these really extremely performing, underperforming school districts to help them move forward. So to me, it seems, that if you're an educator, you would really understand that.
And I cover a lot of this from around the country as well. I just talked last week about a New York charter school that serves 22,000 students in New York City, whose performance doubled that of the Department of Education in New York City. Doubled it from 46% in basic math from third to eighth grade to 96%. And this was across all demographics, the highest they've ever seen for black students, for Hispanic students, for the 22,000 that produce. You can't just turn away for numbers like that and say they double the performance of the Department of Education. And you know what? The public school systems where these charter schools operate start to perform better themselves because there is that competition.
Yeah, correct. And you see those numbers, what you call average yearly progress and kids, you know, being able to read in third grade versus being pushed forward and not being able to read and having things impacted down the road. But when you, as parents, start looking at that average yearly progress and those test scores and you see them and you see differences among school districts, among ages, you really start to get an education yourself on, wow, how could 46% be a great percentage?
Yeah, and listen, I understand the PSEA, the teachers' union, have to look out for themselves. But as an elected senator here in Pennsylvania, you have to look out not only for these teachers and employees of local school districts that you cover, but the parents, but the children, but the grandparents and the taxpayers that are paying school taxes that may not have children in school for the best result, the best bang for those tax dollars.
Right, right. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, after that press conference happened yesterday, I think most people know that I am very much a productive person in trying to make and help our education system, our public education system, whatever education system that works for that child or that family. I'm trying to strengthen them so, you know, our kids have the best options. So most people know that. And even our public administrators, which I did get a message that said, we know how much you support us and try to help us in many ways, you know, be able to create the best environment for our students. And, you know, was also disappointed in that press conference, which I think, you know, again, in my role, you know, there's so much on the plate, but what we have to look at is saying there's a lot of things that we have to provide in this state budget. And the one thing that I know for sure, Rob, is we have a lot of responsibilities of core government responsibilities, our roads, our bridges, our education system, our senior services, things that really, you know, are important. But taxpayers are tapped out. And when I say that, I know my district. I know that the local taxes from county governments have gone up. The school taxes have gone up. You know, the gas taxes have gone up. Everything has gone up to a point, utilities. And my job is at the state level to make sure that we provide core government services and we do so in the most efficient way. We do so in the most productive way. And I don't create a budget that is going to cause our taxpayers either now, this year, or 5 years from now, an increase in their taxes that I absolutely know they can't handle.
Yeah, and listen, the teachers union need to understand that this as a mixed government, you have a Democratic governor, you have a Democratic House, run a majority House, and a Republican majority Senate. The budget isn't just about them, and the governor needs to realize his budget, which is $3 billion more than last year that was proposed, isn't just a rubber stamp. It needs to be about compromise, and he submitted this thinking, you know, this should just be a rubber stamp. I have the House. Senate needs to drop in line, and that's not what's best for all the taxpayers in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, no, I think you covered that perfectly because, you know, it isn't a dictatorship. And when that's the role of government is that back and forth and banter and pros and cons and a compromise that works. And, you know, his initial budget that he presented back in February was $51.5 billion. I mean, even the Democrat House was not willing to vote on that. And, you know, so then you look at, you know, they recently passed a $50.6 billion budget, you know, and so that's still, you know, way more than what we take in on a basis, about $45 billion a year in revenues, based on some of our IFO, which is the Independent Fiscal Office projections, and then our governor's administration office. So we know right off the bat, you know, $45 billion is what we bring in. And so, you know, just the cost to carry on some of the basic services is taken up. And you know, it's just a reality, just like anyone has in their house. You bring in a certain amount of money, what money goes out the door, you know? And so it's that old phrase, you can't spend more than you have. It's pretty simple when you get down to that, but government is big and there are a lot of responsibilities. So we have it tough, but I think that compromise and that reality of what actually happens and how this has to work is definitely, you know, not being acknowledged as much as it should at this point. You know, it definitely is not a dictatorship and, you know, my way or the highway.
Yeah, and I've talked about for weeks now, because the budget is going on almost 8 weeks coming up of delayed, but behind being where it should have been approved. You know, we know that school districts aren't getting the necessary funding and have to plan their budgets, which are mostly already have been done already, without knowing how much they're actually getting in a budget. Our social service departments for each counties are having to piecemeal together because they're not getting the funding that they need from this. So there's a lot of entities here that are waiting to see what happens in Harrisburg. And again, unfortunately, Harrisburg is not leading from the front. The governor is not leading from the front in using his social media presence, which is vast, with his 21 staffers that he has, to say, hey, here's my conference room. Where's the leadership from the Senate? I want the leadership from the House. I want everybody here. We're going to 12, 15-hour days until this gets done, and no one's going home until.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's the point where, you know, we passed a budget that was last year's budget just a week ago to ensure that our schools, our social services, could get their money, as well as some of, you know, SEPTA and some of our rural transportation systems. So we passed a budget to say, hey, it's the last year's budget numbers, but we'll get money immediately to the schools and immediately to our social services. And they have not acted on that. And the governor has not taken a leadership role to say, you know, let's do this as we continue further conversations about much larger issues.
And again, we're speaking to State Senator Rosemary Brown now on this. With the budget discussions that are taking place, where we stand now, what, in your opinion, are the major sticking points right now that are holding this up?
Well, I think the spend number is obviously the largest sticking point. You know, like I said, we passed a budget with last year's number to give immediate funding. The House passed a budget recently at $50.6 billion. But again, we take in $45 billion once you take out our tax refunds. So, you know, there's a $5 billion hole right there, at least, a little over $5 billion. So we're looking at, you know, getting that number down for the simple fact that we need to ensure that we have a balanced budget now and that we don't create deficits and problems for future taxation issues down the road. Our goal is to say, whether we are in the Senate, whether you're an elected official 5 years from now, you want to make sure that you are as responsible as you can for the taxpayer and creating an environment that is realistic to what's, you know, pulling in revenues. And it is hard. We have a lot of needs in the state. We have a lot of, you know, core services, like I said, but that's where, you know, how we do things also needs to be starting to get deeper into the details, doing things better, going into each agency. Where can we be more efficient? Where do we have programs that don't work and different program could take over in a better way, or, you know, modernizing things? So I think there's a lot of opportunities to make government better, work better for you.
And you talk about that elected politician who's dedicated to their position 5 years down the road. That's in case you're only planning on being here in the short term and maybe have higher expectations and don't care if our rainy day fund is depleted or not.
Right. And that's important. I mean, you know, it's not just for a press release. It's not just for talking to people or making a statement right now. This is about public service. This is about doing the right thing for the position you're in and having that leadership and responsibility that you spoke about. And when you go into our positions, you know, no one is perfect. They're difficult. And I respect, you know, people from both sides of the aisles, but I absolutely respect more than anything the honesty and the realistic comments of what is actually happening and what you have to do. And you'll hear this a lot in Harrisburg that, you know, governing is not easy. Governing is leadership, and governing is really understanding the details and doing the best job that you possibly can and forecasting out as much as you can.
All right. State Senator Rosemary Brown here on WILK News Radio. Thank you. Keep in touch with us to keep us updated on progress down in Harrisburg on this budget, because it is important to every single Pennsylvanian.
It really is, and I hope people are watching. And Rob, thank you so much for your time today, too.
Thank you, Senator. Talk to you soon.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. It's 3:22 here at WILK. We'll be back with the Rob O'Donnell Show in just a minute. Hey, it's Rob O'Donnell back on WILK News Radio. It's 4:27 here, 65 degrees. I am back live. I want to thank Jake for getting that together real quick. And that was an interview with Senator Rosemary Brown that we played at the start of the show today at 3:07. Just before the, just at the 4 o'clock news break, if you recall, if you were listening, they said that an F-18 Super Hornet off of Norfolk went down and the pilot ejected into the water. And that was during the news break. And I started texting some texts because my son was flying in an F-18 Super Hornet off of Norfolk today. He had a training flight himself. And normally when something like that happens, I get a text saying, hey, something happened, but I'm good. And that's all we look for here. But I text my son and I didn't get an answer. I text his wife and we didn't get an answer. And then I started reaching out to people I know to see if there was any more details on that. And it turns out it was, and this is a statement from the United States Navy that's on their X account, Norfolk, Virginia, at approximately 9:53 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, a pilot assigned to Strike Fighter Squadron VFA 83, which is the Rampagers, ejected from an F-18E Super Hornet while operating off the coast of Virginia during a routine training flight. Multiple search and rescue assets were deployed and quickly arrived at the scene. The pilot was rescued at approximately 11:21 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time and was transported to a local hospital for further medical evaluation. The F-18E remains in the water where it had crashed. The cause of the mishap is under investigation. And that's a statement from the U.S. Navy official X account. The Strike Fighter Squadron VFA 83, the Rampagers, is the sister squadron of my son's squadron. And they were in the air at the same time doing the same thing, training flights, when this occurred. If you remember, we have Hurricane Evern off the North Carolina coast right about now, causing havoc in the seas up and down the eastern seaboard. So you can imagine what the water was like 50 to 100 miles off the coast of Virginia Beach for a half an hour, bobbing up and down after ejecting from a strike fighter aircraft. So there was a bit of concern on my part. I would say maybe a little parental panic as well. Trading some phone calls with my wife and trying to reach out to anyone to contact either my son or his wife to say if everything was okay. We did get in contact. Everything is good. Was involved, but obviously not the plane that ejected. And again, an F-18E is a single seat pilot, which just has a pilot. My son is in an F-18F Super Hornet, which is a dual pilot where you have a pilot and a wizzo. So that was the concern when I heard the news story and started reaching out and wasn't able to get in touch with them. So, I asked Jake to replay the interview with Senator Brown in there. I know I got some text messages on why we were replaying the interview from earlier so soon. Because sometimes we will play it in the 5 o'clock hour because some people listening at the 3 o'clock. So, I apologize for replaying that so soon, but I appreciate Jake getting that together real quick. So I was able to make some texts and phone calls and get some verification. And while I was doing that, like I said, the United States Navy themselves have put out a statement on the incident. But we did cover it on our 4 o'clock news break with Paula and the ABC news break. So that's the story, and I'm sticking to it. So I appreciate your patience there. But all's good. Even this pilot that did eject is okay, is in the hospital getting evaluated. You have to realize being ejected from a F-18 Super Hornet is probably one of the most violent things your body can go through, to where it's basically shooting you out of a shotgun, out of a plane, up and away, and then coming down into, God can only know what the seas look like out there, 15, 20-foot waves for a half an hour till rescue crews get there to pick you up. There were other F-18 fighter aircraft out there training, like I said. They were circling and keeping an eye on the situation, but they can obviously not land or pick anybody up out at sea. You need the rescue helicopters for that. And as you can tell, ejected at approximately 9:53 and wasn't plucked out of the water until 11:21. That's almost a half an hour sitting in those god-awful rough seas out there because of Hurricane Erin. But thankfully, the pilot of the Rampagers, VFA 83, is okay and in a hospital right now. And everybody's going to go home tonight, so that's a good thing. It's 4:32 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paula Degman. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's the point of the show where we honor our heroes here in law enforcement who made the ultimate sacrifice on this day, August 20th. Happy to announce we have no officers from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania on this day, August 20th, to announce. So that's always a good thing that I could say that. The past couple of days, yesterday there was a story, either the beginning of the week or late last week, there was another story about these crimes that are going unpunished, these very serious crimes that are going unpunished, be it the 15-month-old toddler that was beat by a daycare worker who was released on bail while she awaits trial, to the 16-year-old who shot and killed his father over taking his electronics away, to getting probation, to here's another story today. Here's a headline. Convicted rapist who assaulted a Tinder date after a Soho House meetup skates with just probation, thanks to a lenient New York City judge. It's a better alternative, they said. Convicted rapist who assaulted a Tinder date in his West Village apartment got off with a slap on the wrist Tuesday of this week when a Manhattan judge sentenced him to just probation and therapy. Prosecutors had pushed for the maximum sentence of 4 years behind bars for William Hathaway, but Manhattan Supreme Court Judge Josh Hanshaft said he ultimately found the better alternative to prison was sending the sicko back to the streets. That's not what he said, but that's what his actions did. I'm not sure if this sentence is what the right answer should be. You should be sitting in a jail cell for a while to get a sense of what incarceration is about, the judge told Hathaway, 33, at a sentencing hearing. But I do find the probationary sentence will at least get you the help so you do not hurt another individual again. The judge sentenced Hathaway, now a Miami, Florida resident, to 10 years of probation and ordered to partake in sex offender treatment program and register as a sex offender. Hathaway, who grew up in West Hartford, Connecticut, went to trial and was convicted by a jury on April 24th of rape in the third degree. He met the victim, a 23-year-old woman he had connected with at a dating app, at a Soho House on February 15th, 2020. He then took her to his apartment where he raped her. That night, he took my control. He took away my voice. He took away my dignity, the victim, who has since moved out of the state, told the court on Tuesday. The woman, who was not being identified because she's a victim of sexual assault, as it should be, says she's battles with alcohol abuse and suicidal thoughts ever since. She said her life changed forever when she met the monster and he decided to do whatever he wanted with her. Third degree rape, probation, and therapy. These stories just keep popping up. Incredible. Outrageous what our justice system has become. It's not even shadow of justice anymore. And something needs to change. It's 4:41 here at WILK. Time for 2020 traffic and weather together. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. 4:45, 65 degrees. It's time for Today in History, because how do we know where we're going unless we remember where we've been? And not all of it is good history, but we promise to make a more perfect union, not perfect from the start. So what do we have on this day, August 20th, in U.S. history? 1619, the first African slaves arrive in English North America. The Dutch ship to the Point Comfort, Virginia, modern-day Hampton, Virginia. This marked the beginning of African slavery in English colonies. 1866, President Andrew Johnson formally ends the Civil War. Johnson issued a proclamation declaring the insurrection officially over, except in Texas, which had been the last Confederate state to surrender. 1920, the first commercial radio station begins broadcasting. Station 8MK, now WWJ in Detroit, Michigan, started regular news radio broadcast, helping launch the modern mass media. 1940, Leon Trotsky assassinated in Mexico, well, not a U.S. event directly. Trotsky, assassination by a Soviet agent, resonated heavily in the U.S., influencing anti-communist movement during World War II and beyond. 1953, Soviet Union shoots down U.S. plane, a U.S. Air Force RB-50 reconnaissance plane, was shot down over the Sea of Japan by Soviet fighters, escalating Cold War tensions. That was 1953. 1968, Soviet-led invasion of Czechoslovakia. Its U.S. condemned the invasion, further deepening Cold War hostilities between Washington and Moscow. Those hostilities still somewhat go on today, right? Some notable birthdays today. Benjamin Harrison, 1833, 23rd President of the United States. H.P. Lovecraft, 1890, influential American horror writer. Connie Chung, 1946, trailblazing American journalist and news anchor. Robert Plant, 1948, British rock singer Led Zeppelin, whose music greatly influenced American rock. And Al Roker, 1954, American TV weatherman and host. This day in some culture, we have 1969, the Beatles' Abbey Road photo session released in the U.S., cementing one of the most iconic album covers ever. 1975, Viking 1 launched by NASA, the first successful U.S. mission to land on Mars. And that's pretty much this day. Wednesday, August 20th. Now, it's not always Wednesday, but it's always August 20th on this day. In history, I appreciate the text messages coming in, thanking everything was, glad everything was okay with the minor scare we had. Interesting, but that's the kind of world we live in. It's funny because I get a text message from my daughter down in Quantico with the Marines saying that she's training with grenades today. So that was the text message we got yesterday from our youngest daughter, our baby girl. I'm playing with grenades today. Welcome to the Marines. And then the issue with the F-18 fighter that had some sort of issue where the pilot had to eject. Not a good thing to happen when you speak to your son the night before and says he's got a training flight off of Virginia Beach the next day, the same time that it happens. But everything's good, and everyone is home safe, even the pilot that ejected. Material things could be replaced. I know that some thankful. The company that makes the ejection seats that a lot of our planes use, the Martin Baker is the plane. They keep a tally of how many lives they've saved from their ejection seats, and thankfully they do. And if you ever have to eject, you qualify for a watch. You can get a watch. And only people who have ejected get that watch. And it's engraved with your ejection number on it. You were the 8,256th ejection to date and life that has been saved thanks to their American-made ejection seat, the Martin Baker. Thankfully, they are companies out there that make equipment like that and take it seriously because every life they've saved is a family. It's interesting also that our tactical aircraft pilots can only withstand two ejections in their career. After the second one, they are done flying. They can no longer fly because of the trauma it puts on your body. You lose about 2 to 3 inches, they say, during an ejection. That's how much it compresses your spine. So it's not a pleasant ride, to say the least. A lot of times it knocks the pilot out. And they come to when they're floating down under their canopy, their parachute attached to their seat. So thankful for them. And there's been a couple of movies that have portrayed it, but your legs, your ankles are tethered by cables because you're using your feet to fly. But just before an ejection within the split second, those cables lock your feet underneath your seat. So when you do eject, the dashboard or of your cockpit does not rip your knees off. So there are brackets around your ankles that you have to secure that these cables rip your legs underneath the seat so it can properly shoot you out of the top of the aircraft. one of the movies Behind Enemy Lines with Owen Wilson shows that very dramatically. They actually specifically show it right under there. It's one of the best movies that show a proper ejection, because that's the beginning of the movie when they eject behind enemy lines. So, but all's good, and we move on with the show. And they will hopefully be at my house sometime late night tonight or early tomorrow morning, because I am on grandpa duty for the next while. So I don't know if I'll be more tired, more excited, or what. It's 4:52. See, I got it right this time. 4:52. We'll be back with the Rob O'Donnell Show. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK. It is 4:55. I'm just seeing the executive chairman of Bed Bath & Beyond just announced that his company will no longer operate in California. California has created one of the most overregulated, expensive, and risky environments for business in America. It's a system that makes it harder to employ people, harder to keep our doors open, and harder to deliver value to customers. That's part of the statement from Marcus Lemonis, executive chairman of Bed Bath & Beyond. So, little update information there. As we talked about with this ejection off the coast of Virginia Beach, waters are something else. Hurricane Erin is bringing what's been called as deadly waves to New York, New Jersey, as it powers through the Atlantic. It has already flooded and caused major devastation in the Outer Banks region of North Carolina. It has flooded some seawalls and is flooding inland. There's a lot of video out there. If you do that, some homes that were right on the beach are at risk of, if not already, collapsed. This morning they were showing the water was well past them and compromising them, and they expected them to not survive this storm. Now, this isn't a hurricane damage that we're commonly used to. This is not a wind event. It's not a rain event, because it's not making landfall. It's still hundreds of miles off the coast, but it is causing massive waves, massive storm surge. And that's what is bringing all the issue. Swimming is closed from Massachusetts down to Florida currently right now along the coast. All beaches are closed. Swimming at the beaches are closed. So you could just imagine 50, 100 miles out to sea if you had to eject and were bobbing in there in your flight suit with your survival gear. And again, he or she was picked up and is in a hospital being evaluated, but says is in good condition. So that's good. But this Hurricane Erin is causing havoc along the coast. And we've been warning this because, you know, it's that time of year where people are trying to get that last beach weekend in. I know people who are at Myrtle Beach that said, there was no way you're going near the water. It was pretty bad. Clouds, obviously, wind, but that storm surge, that riptide, that current is what's really causing the issues up and down the eastern seaboard from, again, all the way from Florida up to Massachusetts. New York and New Jersey have closed all its beaches to swimming, and I saw that most other states along the coastline have also done as much. Now, it has started, if you look at the track, teetering to the east, so it is maybe starting to turn away from us like they expected it to. But right now, I believe it's off the coast of North Carolina and headed up and away from the U.S. This storm that we're getting here came from the northwest of us, and it's shearing the side of the hurricane off. It's actually pushing that front away from us. So the rain we're getting now, I know it's cold, I know it's a nuisance, and the reason it's cold is this is coming down from Canada. It is a northwest push that's bringing this rain that we're getting down. It came from upstate New York to us, and that's why we have this cold weather. We open the doors, and the screens are still in the doors, and my wife switched to her sweatpants and sweatshirt, and I was laughing at her. I says, come on, it's still August. You got your sweatshirt on already? And she said she was freezing. Winter's over. What'd you do? I can't stay here anymore. We got to go someplace warmer. And just a couple of days ago, it was pretty warm and humid, so I'm good. I love this weather. What I don't love is those damn pumpkin spice drinks that are already in stores near our house. Right? What'd they say? Dunkin' Donuts already got the pumpkin spice. Listen, no, you can't have anything to do with pumpkin spice until mid-September. Like, you guys got to learn the rules. It's not Christmas until Santa Claus walks into Macy's on Thanksgiving Day. It's not the Christmas season. And you can't do any pumpkin spice or Halloween-y stuff until mid-September. Come on, give us a little break. Let's enjoy some of the summer. 6 o'clock here. 6 o'clock. I'm all messed up today. It's 5 o'clock here at WILK.